I'm Julie Bullitt. I've been a family therapist for over 30 years.
I'm David Bullitt. I've been a divorce and family lawyer for more than 35 years.
Together, we have been married for more than 37 years.
In our professional practices, the two of us have been witnesses to individuals and families struggling with life's most difficult challenges. In this podcast, we will talk about the conversations we have had,
the conversations we should have had,
and those that every relationship needs to have in order to find success, happiness, and fulfillment.
This is Conversations for Couples,
the podcast. Very excited today. We have a guest this week from the business world. Scott Montgomery is the CEO of WorldGate LLC, a management consulting firm. And what's interesting about Scott is that he coaches other entrepreneurs, business people, leaders on their paths to success. He's the author of a very, very interesting, thought-provoking book called How Did You Get Here? Welcome, welcome, Scott. We know how you got here. We connected through the internet. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you. And thank you for having me. I'm really looking forward to our conversation. And it wasn't the internet. It was also Bethany Beach. We have that in common.
That's right. Yes. We were having dinner at the same restaurant. We could plug the restaurant, but we probably wouldn't want to charge them to do that.
We met on the porch and were you celebrating a birthday or were
we? Yes,
that's
exactly right. Yes, it was my 52nd birthday, I think.
Oh, my goodness.
And we were singing and you guys chimed in and it was exciting as we were leaving and it was nice to meet you. Yeah,
it was great. Connections are an amazing thing.
We've stayed connected via various social media platforms ever since then. But what drew us to you, Scott, in terms of what we do is, you know, in your work as a leadership coach and some of the things that we read in your book, you focus on the importance of relationships that people have in the work, their work, whether it's a CEO, entrepreneur, CFO, whatever they may be. And I want to talk to you a little bit about the strategy and the importance of relationships in the work that you do with folks, but also how that can convert to what we do, which is couples relationships.
Oh, yeah. No, thank you. That's a great question. And really the genesis of the book and really the purpose of my career as I've moved through my career. I'll start with, I wasn't really a stellar student at all. I was actually disengaged from school as I was, my parents were as well. And they were going through their divorce and I was sort of navigating my future without much of a map. I found relationships to sort of be the stabilizer for me at an early age. I had great mentors, great bosses, a few good teachers. And I learned that is for me how I ended up finding success in my business as well, because then I knew how to manage the contractual pieces of my deliverables with people and not just the paper. And so I guess it was probably 2019 when we hit COVID, I realized maybe I want to share this story and I want to start to get this out to the general public, the next generation, if you will. Because we live in such an area, I'm in Northern Virginia, where it's like competitive and degree centric and the more, the more, the more. Mm-hmm. And really for me, I was able to achieve the more, the more, the more because of the people I was actually paying attention to and the relationships that I was in. And while I may not have been prepared on paper, I was honoring those relationships by delivering on the advice that was provided to me and the opportunities that were provided to me in honor of those being provided to me. Mm-hmm. So it was a very interesting cyclical thing. And I thought, how do you capture this in an era where things are changing?
Yeah.
And they're becoming so electronic and so paper driven and degree driven and, you know, so tactical. And really what my book's about, and I think what you guys are really promoting as well, is it's about relationships. It's about supporting each other and it's about the human aspect. And so for me, it's the human aspect of business, not therapy and early childhood traumas, but I do talk a little bit in the book about the distinction between coaching, advice, psychology. Mm-hmm. And we get into those, but they are sort of intertwined. I think that's our attraction to each other as well as why we stayed in touch.
Yeah. So it's interesting because I'm not a business person. But when I read your book, I was just checking off like aha moments in terms of like the connections, the relationships, and you talk a lot about structure and how that's helpful for, that's been helpful for you. So there was so many things that I got out of the book as a, you know, as a person and a therapist. So it was really great.
Thank you.
And I'd like to, and I know David, you know, likes to go in order of his thoughts, but I'm really curious about two things that I'd like to ask about. And one of them is that you talked about writing this book in part as a grieving process, because I know you lost your brother. Can you talk a little bit about that?
I think it was cathartic for me. It was also a chance to sort of siphon through some of the things that I was experiencing, and it gave me the space to sort of reflect on where I've been. So I think that's probably part of it, and it humanizes what the topics were.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you, in your work with folks, do you share that story with the people that you work with, the people that you coach and help them do their jobs in a better fashion?
Yeah, I think it's important to share a lot of the stories. I think for me, it was in an honor of our relationship. And then it was also in a way to just sort of humanize and break down and create some vulnerability so that there's some trust there and some sort of authenticity. Yeah. And I think it sort of married well with what I was going through and what you'll go through forever. And also these topics that I think are super important.
Yeah, I do. We do think people respond better. It seems to me are more to understanding where the information is coming from, the source, not just that here's a great idea. Here's what you should do. Here's your 5 points. Here's the path to follow. But, you know, what's the source, right? Where's that coming from? And I think, you know, your story in terms of how you got there, which is right up there, right in front, which is very, very unique and interesting.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
no, I appreciate.
I agree.
Well, and I was just going to elaborate for you too, that as I was going through the coaching certification process, it was about a 6-month rigor of training and learning about different things that make you an effective coach. I kept thinking to myself during the process, I don't know that I want to hang my shingle as a coach. I don't know that I always want to sit in front of someone for an hour and bill them to help them self-reflect and get in touch with the skills that I talk about in this book. But rather, I found I kept saying to myself, I should write a book about this. I should capture all of this. And then when my brother died and then when COVID hit and I found myself with all this time, I was able to weave what I think is an impactful story with the truths of how to be a better leader. And I think it's funny, and I love that you touch in on my brother and that you kind of go into the human aspect of this, because for all the interviews and all the podcasts I'm on, I've been dancing around that subject a little bit because you don't know where the emotion lies.
Yeah.
But also, it's really humanizing. And I think that's what you really want to pay attention to.
Yeah. Well, we're glad we could, you know, bring that to light here, and you're in a safe place, because just, you know, millions of people are listening, hopefully, to this. But you know,
at least nine.
But
you got one more than me.
As a therapist, I think that those stories and those pieces are so important. And the other thing that I'm, you know, intrigued about, and I know because I sort of follow your journey in terms of your life and see your kids and your wife, how important Caitlin, your wife, has been in your, just in your life and your career. She helps run the business, correct? So you work with her too.
Yeah, she's across the hall.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a lot of fun.
Yes. So,
she doesn't like it more than I don't like it.
Okay. So, there was one quote that I want to remember, right? And I had written it down.
She's been the string to my kite ever since.
Yes.
I remember.
Yes. I loved that so much.
Oh, thank you.
Can you talk about that? Can you explain what that means?
So a couple of things. You know, Caitlin is my soulmate. Caitlin is someone that navigated my journey in finding love better than I was navigating it. So that kind of brought us together. I kept saying, what is this? What is this? And she's like, sometimes it just is what it is. And I was like, wow, that's really a powerful statement. I think I'm going to marry you. If you'll have me. Yeah, that was it. But Caitlin and I have observed our relationship. Well, first of all, we definitely try and communicate. And we always start with, we're not ill-intended, right? You're not ill-intended with your partner. So I think a lot of times when I see divorce and I see a lot of folks fighting, it's always the assumption that they're on the attack and that they're ill-intended. And it's really about how you're communicating, right? So Kate and I know when to take a step back. We know when to use our right words. We work on that in our relationship. And I think one of the things that we've observed that's as a result of that is she's very much a deliverables person, very much task oriented, very mm-hmm. list centric. And I am very much in the clouds, very much the visionary, very much mm-hmm. say it and make it so. Don't care yeah. about how you get there. I watch right. the field. Yeah. And there's a real yin and yang in that, mm-hmm. that type of relationship. And I think when it was time to open up the business and I was starting to get some traction at WorldGate, I realized that our kids were going to need a lot of attention if I was going to give it to the business. And so the way we were able to both be A players at home was for us to kind of work together and then assign each other through communication. Mm-hmm. You'll handle the kids' mm-hmm. extracurricular activities. I'll handle the revenue. Mm-hmm. You manage the money. I'll bring mm-hmm. it in. We'll have the kids do the dishes, because I talk about that in the chapter. They'll have their responsibilities. And I think communicating that and being clear with that is huge. And I think that's really what we talk about in our relationship. And also not to just formalize our relationship. There was a lot of iterations of this book where I want to make sure there's a lot of love and a lot of affection and a lot of deep soul oriented stuff mm-hmm. between us that was uncovered before we started on this part of the adventure, before we became Kite and String.
Wow.
And I think that's really impactful. That's so to cool. share.
Tell us, tell me a little bit what you're talking about.
Well, I think we vetted each other out for 4 years before we got married.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So you took your
private
time.
Investigators and all of that. Whole nice.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you a quick story. Her father's ex-CIA. I'm allowed to disclose. Okay. And okay. I definitely was upon our engagement, the shutters were shut, the shades were drawn, and I was inducted.
Polygraph
into
and
yes, the whole nine yards. Okay. Wow, 100%.
You went through the ringer. That's cool. So when you were talking about sort of your journey together and you work together, and obviously you're married, and that's really cool. And as you were talking about like how to handle, how to handle everything. It reminds me of, have you ever gotten a package, like a big box, and they have those stickers on that says two-man lift?
Yes. Yes.
And that's yes. And I always think of it, I use that with couples a lot, like the benefit of a two-man lift or right. a two-woman lift or whatever it is. But you're really talking about that. And I think that is something that's just like underrated in terms of couples. Like if you're working together as a team, you're more than two people mm-hmm. and you can really do more. I mean, mm-hmm. I know that David and I are, he has his strengths and I have my weaknesses and we really
you
balance
have your strengths
each other.
Too. And he has his weaknesses
too. Absolutely.
Right, absolutely. Right, right.
Well, much fewer on weaknesses.
Yeah. Understood. Same in our relationship.
Not really.
Yeah. He's nearly perfect.
Nearly that's hard to really quantify and put your hands.
Yeah,
on.
I love that. And then the power of two is really more than two. And that's what you're talking about. Like being able to do that with good communication, with respect. Mm-hmm. One of the things we also talk about is assuming good intentions when you're in a relationship, which mm-hmm. I think people have trouble doing. People want to be right. They want to win.
Right.
They want to. And when you have that dynamic, it just sets you up for not good things.
Totally. That's exactly right. And I find that I carry that into business and it actually works really well there too, because the people that work for me, if I'm so angry or upset over an action, if I take a step back and go, were they undermining or were they just mm-hmm. needing training, right?
Yeah.
Were they undermining or their experience is exposing a different way I should view it? That is the work and it is exhausting. But that is what I'm trying to say. And I think you're trying to say in your book and in experiences like we're having right now for the next generation. And, what keeps coming up for me, and I'll share it with you guys briefly, it's sort of related. I was at Fordham University talking about this very subject, and we did a River of Life, and we had all the students sort of evaluate how they got here. And at one of the questions one of the students asked me that I just love to ponder, and there's no definitive answer, but after having read my book, they said to me, well, what is the line between a business relationship and a personal relationship? Mm-hmm. And I thought that was so powerful in light of also what we're talking about, because for me, it's very much blurred. A lot of the folks that I work with, I probably worked for who now work for me mm-hmm. and they've been to my beach house and we do things together and we are affectionate with each other in real mm-hmm. life as well. Mm-hmm. And we drive the workforce also. And so it's a line that it can, you can never truly answer it for yourself, but it is, the awareness alone is the purpose of what we're doing, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fascinating. As you're talking about that, I'm thinking as a therapist, how my boundary and my line has to be well-defined. And I was talking with a colleague this week and she went to a training and they asked, how many friends should a therapist have? And she was like, wow, why are they asking this question? That's such a weird thing. Like, is there really an answer? Is this a trick question? And the answer ended up being enough friends that you don't want to be friends with your clients.
Oh, right. Fair enough.
And so I thought, wow, that's really interesting. But oftentimes, I mean, I have clients that I really, really like that, yeah. that if I weren't the therapist, we could be friends. But I have to, you know, very carefully keep boundaries. And it's interesting. Another piece of this is because we do the podcast, because I've written books and we put ourselves out there, it's always mm-hmm. interesting when people come to me and they'll be like, oh, I read your book. And I'm like, oh, so how do you feel about that? Like knowing yeah. more about yeah. me as a person than you would ordinarily know about your therapist. So that's probably a whole nother podcast. But anyway,
it's a great awareness, right? And I would also suggest that I wasn't saying no boundaries. I was yes. saying, set my boundaries a little yeah. blurry
yeah.
and you know, yeah. right. You have your personal boundaries, but for me, I have found real success not being that stellar student in having boundaries that are shiftable and maybe yeah. more in favor of relationship than business.
Well, you
right?
talk yeah. a lot about in your book about, you know, and I think it sounds to me like you emphasize with the folks that you work with that you're not on your own.
Say that again for me. I'm sorry.
I said in your book, you talk a lot about not being, you know, a loner, that you have to, your emphasis mm-hmm. is on, you can't do things, you can't succeed alone. And, mm-hmm. and that really hits home, obviously, mm-hmm. you know, in our relationship world, because you just can't do it. Make a relationship successful if one person is pulling and the other one isn't, or if there's external right. factors that are affecting things.
Yeah.
That's right. No, you can't do it alone. And, you know, just to move our conversation through on that sort of other topics that I talk about are being at peak performance in said relationship, right? We support each other in working out, in having other friends, yeah. in how we raise our children, in working at peak performance, not mm-hmm. only at the office, but with each other, right? And creating yeah. those girls' weekends and boys'
yes.
weekend space.
So important. Yeah, David just came
trust.
Back from, yeah, David just went to Nashville. Right. Yeah. And it was
yeah.
great.
Took me 48 hours to recover, and now I'm ready to go back.
yeah. He's been on the wagon.
Yeah. But you also talk about a growth mindset.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. So talk a little bit about that. What does that mean, and why is it important for folks both in leadership roles and also, you know, in their relationship?
Yeah, it's a great question. And growth mindset was introduced to me by Carol Dweck's book when my kids were in elementary school. Right. So. It really is, it's really about the possibility and not the no, right? So for me, it's about, well, what's the potential here, right? It's mm-hmm. assessing the situation. And let's use that example of an employee does something that's not where you want them to be. And if you take a step back from a growth mindset and try and figure out what is it that they need to learn or what is it that you want them to do and how do you communicate that more effectively, that's more of a growth mindset than they're in trouble, they did something wrong and they need to fix
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that resonates in a lot of different ways. I mean, Carol Dweck, you know, takes the cake on the book, but I made reference to it because I thought it was really mm-hmm. about, you know, coming in with that not ill-intended and sort of learner mindset. Like, where yeah. can I make a change and how can I make it better?
Yeah.
You know, I think people as parents can start that with their kids at a very young age. And Julie, actually, I'm listening to you talking. Julie exhibited this a couple of weeks ago with our granddaughter, I can't recall which. And she was in our kitchen, she's 4 years old, and spilled, what was it that got just completely dumped all over the floor?
It was first a puzzle and then the Legos.
A 1,000-piece puzzle and then God knows how many pieces of Lego. And instead of doing what other parents may have done, Julie just started laughing. And that turned into, okay, let's pick everything up and we'll move forward.
Right.
And while that's a simplistic example,
yeah. Yeah.
it certainly falls in the bucket of what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Right.
And
mindset.
And I, Yeah. And I will have to say that I handled that situation much differently as a grandmother than I would have as a parent. If my kid had dropped a 1,000-piece puzzle, I probably would have maybe not screamed, but maybe like given a like negative response. But with my grandchild, it was easy to be like, oh my God, this is fun. Like, what a mess, but we're going to clean it up together. And I love the growth mindset.
You bring up a very, sorry to interrupt you, Julie, but I know for time's sake, this is really important to hear. And I love that you bring in the evolution of all of this, because what I have found about writing this book and having these conversations is I'm not like the sage of all this great advice. Right. God help me, all of us. Yes. It took me a long road of flipping out on the kids, not really understanding where my wife was coming from, dictatorship in my own company, thinking if I controlled everything, it would make it better. And really what I'm trying, and I think you're trying to do too, is get this word out to those kids that are 30, 25, 35, pay attention to these things just a little earlier. I mean, it's a rite of passage to go through them, but it's also doesn't need to be you hit your head on every single tree as hard as possible, like we have in some instances.
Sure.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that. And I'm thinking about a quote that that I heard a couple of weeks ago, which is the more reflective you are, the more effective you are.
Oh, I like that.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you got it. And you got it right.
I know that's actually surprising. But yes. And I've been trying to practice that more.
Yeah.
Just in terms of like not reacting, but sort of thinking about things for a second and then, you know, having a different reaction, hopefully.
You also, go ahead, Scott.
It's hard to do that. And so for our listeners today and for people that are sort of engaging that sort of new concept, it's really hard to be self-reflective in a moment, but it's even harder to pick up the pieces of all the people you piss off if you're not.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Right. Exactly.
Just keep that in mind.
There was another old saying, I'll make sure I got it right. It's easy to go up the ladder of success so long as you don't plan on going back down again. Obviously infers you got to be careful when you're working your way up there. And one other thing I want to talk to you about, because again, this is one of those areas you talk about blending and where things, you know, sort of overlap between what we do. And that is goal setting. You spend a fair amount of time talking in your book. And I've seen some of your other stuff in your podcast. You talk about goal setting in the work that you do. Why is that important? To folks, not only individually, but from your perspective, in terms of a relationship.
Well, I think so. In terms of a relationship, my goals are for happiness, right? So there's no real criteria to being in a peak performance in a relationship, like I sort of emphasize in the chapter around setting goals. But as I witnessed and talk about the beginning of my career to today, I used to spend a lot of time in those futuristic goals. And I didn't always embrace the moment I was in, but I also found that those futuristic goals were a waste of time because the moment I was in was changing the direction of the goal I was planning for 10 years out, right? Like it was like this weird. So I had some really good mentors that were very strategic in the maybe you just do a 1 month, a 6 month, a 2 year goal, right? Mm-hmm. So I wanted to talk about that because it kind of grounds those people like me with ADHD and all the ideas and all the visionaries and all the stuff. Me too. Shiny new toy. Give me one. It'll bring you down a notch, right? And it'll help you sort of work towards a goal and peel back. And I'm a huge fan of call it in and make it so, right? So state your goal, go after it, communicate it effectively, put your habits in place so you're at peak performance, get the right relationships and partnerships to build on it, and you will find success. And that doesn't always mean money. It can mean stabilization.
Yes.
You feel grounded and you feel better. And I think that's really the mission of this chapter and version of my book and how I go into goals. And I get very specific in the goals and we get very linear about like SMART goals, you know, specific, measurable, achievable, and all the stuff.
Yes.
I'll let the readers do that. But for our purposes today, I think it's really important to just talk about how the effect of it and why it's important.
Yeah, absolutely. Awesome. Well,
Scott, as you mentioned before, we got started, we could go on for an hour. So we'll have to defer the rest for a part two. We really, appreciate you coming on. If people want to find you or find your book, get a hold of you, let everyone know what the best ways are of doing that.
HowDidYouGetHere.com.
Easy enough.
Okay. HowDidYouGetThere.com.
How did you get here?
You're actually, how did you get here?
There's See? That ADHD stuff. Yeah. Or reading comprehension.
Yeah, reading
comprehension. How did you get here? .com.
Yes.
Yeah. Go to that site, get that book. It applies to all areas of life, both business and personal. Again, Scott Montgomery, thank you so much for being with us. We are The Bullets, T-E-T-H-E-B-U-L-I-T-T-S. You can find us on at our website, The Bullets.
Social media, The
Bullets. All social media platforms, yep. YouTube, all of those things. And this will be available via video as well, folks, for you people who want to look at it, look at our beautiful faces and not just listen to us.
Yeah.
This is Conversations for Couples.
The podcast. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
Julie Bullitt is a professionally licensed clinical social worker and family therapist. David Bullitt is a divorce and family lawyer. Julie is not your therapist and David is not your lawyer. This podcast is meant for educational and entertainment purposes only.